Hello, friends, and welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting tonight live from London, England, and transmitted by Skype to the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place, and I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I'd like to, if you can, please send lots of love and light to my dear friend Emily in Seattle. She's been having some health difficulties recently, and I know that you're beautiful love, light, and positive energy will really help her. Denise Bartlett is also one of the sponsors of this program, and she's a wonderful person who offers hot water healing and life coaching sessions in the Portland, Oregon area. Her website is www.hihotto.com. She's a certified hot instructor, and I urge you to contact her if you'd like to try one of her wonderful hot water healing products. She can be reached at phone 425-306-6316 or Denise, D-E-N-I-S-E dot Barrett, B as in boy, A-R-R-E-T-T at hihotto.com. I'll be going to Mount Shasta soon on one of my spiritual trips, and if you're interested in going, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Today is the summer solstice, June 21st. It's a little bit after 11 o'clock here in England and in Seattle. It's also June 21st, and we did a beautiful water ceremony yesterday down at the Thames River, and I'd like to play that now. And after that, I have interviews that I did at Findhorn. Findhorn is a beautiful place in Scotland. It's one of the world's most famous eco villages. And I'll be coming back on the air in about 10 minutes to play recordings I did with that. So please listen to our celebration of this special water ceremony we did for the summer solstice yesterday in London, England. We'll play that now, and then I'll be coming back in about 10 minutes.
London being a very, very rich water city that's rich in its history.
Keep talking.
Okay, I've got it. Okay. So, what is a ceremony? A ceremony brings you basically into connection with the sacred. And the ritual we do is basically a ritual and offerings to the water. And the water really is knows we're offering, and we're doing this basically as a witness to the water. And it's really a way of really connecting to something we've lost over generations. And we're realizing, we're awakening the fact is that this is a very special purpose to have ceremony. And ceremony really awakens you to a much more divinely inspired life. Okay? And it's these little rituals we do. What is a blessing? A blessing is really done to nurture the water. And really is, it's a healing vibration. Well, it's an offering, it's a ritual that adds a healing vibration to the world, and we're actually just focusing purely on the water. So anything we do is going to be an offering to the water. What is a prayer? We've kind of lost the understanding of what prayer is, and there might be many interpretations, but prayer is really a communication to the Creator, to the divine, to the sacred. And we do it obviously through words or through thought. We'll talk about that in a minute. So when we come in as a group, and we come as a group, we can focus our intent on single things and start to resonate as a group. And as a coherent group focused on one thing, the power is magnified enormously. And if anyone doesn't know Dr. Motes, I'm sure you will at the end of this, but he was the person who really pioneered the connection between our consciousness and water, and how our individual and our collective consciousness is very connected to water in this beautiful and most pioneering and magnificent way. And Machiko's going to talk about that in detail later on, so I don't want to go too much into that. But his focus, well, his message was very beautiful and very pure, and his message was one of love and gratitude, and understanding the power and the magnificence of love and gratitude, and it's bringing that love and gratitude to everything we do. So what I invite you to come into a vibration of love, and we'll build up this vibration as we go along. Bring your offerings, and each offering is done in that purity of love, that purity of appreciation. And as we do that, the vibration as a group becomes coherent. And as we create a sound, okay, it's really a prayer is like a sonic offering to the divine. And when we come in as group prayer, in coherence, in intent, the sound just comes out from the will and the breath. We create coherent sound, and the sound actually creates light. okay? And that light, well, that, well, as the sound dissipates, the light travels on into eternity and goes into the stars. And then it's reflected back. It's one of Emoto's beautiful philosophies as well. It's magnified back hundreds and hundreds of thousands of times. So all prayers are answered. All prayers are answered. All we need to do is just invite them to, or invite ourselves to understand how to see them and how to hear them and how they're answered. There's a beautiful way of, you know, who ask the question, who turns the stars on at night and who puts the rainbows in the sky? When you have a water ceremony, I've never understood it, but certain magic happens, and I guarantee you somewhere you will see a rainbow today. It might be a reflection somewhere, it might be in the sky, who knows, but something magic, it might happen tomorrow. I can grant you it means our prayers have all been answered, and they always will be. So that's a little bit of background on why we're here. But the big thing really is just to experience it, okay? And don't be shy. If you have some offerings or a poem or a song, and we're going to be sharing some songs, then I invite you to be really open and make our offering to, our sacred offering to the waters. And I now hand over to Charlotte, the wonderful Charlotte, who she and I co-founded the Fellowship of the Spring, which is, I'll let you explain if you want, or we can just enjoy some of the reasons why we're here.
So the Fellowship of the Spring is essentially about guardianship of our waterways. And anyone is part of the Fellowship of the Spring who wants to be a guardian of our waters in this country and around the world. So today, right now, today on this beautiful solstice eve, we're going to make a water medicine together. A vibrational offering, which we are going to make with all our prayers and our intentions on this day, and offer it to the River Thames. And the idea is, when we offer it to the Thames, it will take it through London. It will take it out into the sea. Because all water is connected, it will touch all the lands around the world. So it's an offering for the world. And because water is the element of this planet, it is really the element of our home, and it's the element of our bodies. When we make a water medicine, we are connecting directly with life, with the source on this planet. So, yeah, we're going to have a great time making this water medicine together. And it's going to be a one-off, one of a kind. This will never be repeated again. It's like making a potion. And it's a lot of fun. So if we just kind of come in closer, that'd be amazing. So this is going to be our chalice. And before we all start, I just really invite you to really connect into your heart. Just put your hand on your heart and feel your heart on this solstice eve. And remember the solstice, the summer solstice here in the northern hemisphere, is a real turning point in the calendar and on the planet. It's the day where we have the longest hours of light. We have more sunlight than any time of the year. So there's a lot of light, a lot of physical light descending to this planet in the next few days. And we are in the tide of it today. So we can connect our light, our hearts, with the sunlight together, fusing our prayers with the light of the planet. So I just ask you just to visualize in your heart center like a chalice. Just visualize a chalice, and in that chalice place two prayers. Just drop it into your chalice. One prayer is an individual prayer for yourself. What is that one prayer that you wish for? Just breathe it in and drop it into that chalice in your heart. You've breathed it in and dropped it in, the next prayer is that one prayer for the world right now. Just breathe it into your heart and drop it into that chalice in your heart. breathing into your heart. I invite you to just breathe those prayers around your body. Just breathe them. So it's flooding all your cells with your prayers today. The light of the solstice on this precious day together. Allowing your body to be filled with those prayers. And filled with the light of the solstice. And from that place, while we make our water medicine today, with every action, breath, and word, you will be infusing this sacred medicine with all your movement. There's no need to think anymore. It's through your whole body. It's through your whole being. Okay, thank you. So I invite everyone who has brought waters with them. Now is the time, one by one, to pour them in this bowl. And as you pour them in, please announce where your waters have come from. And as we hear where they've come from, we say welcome.
These are waters from the red and the white spring on Hampstead Heath, the male and the female. Oh, may they bring blessing to all.
Welcome.
Beautiful.
Ooh. This is from a Chailey Beat iron spring in Sussex that's only recently been uncovered. It's very special.
Brand new spring. Welcome.
Welcome.
On the equinox in March, and it's from the White Spring in Glastonbury.
Oh, welcome. Wow.
Welcome.
Welcome.
And this was collected from the river roading at the equinox, and it flows into the Thames.
Welcome. Wow.
Welcome.
This is the cleanest water I could create myself, but it was imprinted this morning with Emoto's imprinting machine, so it has the vibration of love and gratitude and the Ho'oponopono prayer, and so it carries the information of all of that.
Welcome!
Welcome!
Hey.
Can someone pass me that?
Water is that?
This is it.
Can you pass me? Thank you.
Do we know this water?
Yeah.
Oh, it's yours.
Oh, yeah.
We know this water.
This is from a very beautiful spring in Sussex called Pear Tree Well.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Okay. Any more waters?
I think that's all.
Okay. Thank you for...
Yes, I would like to thank you so much, first of all, for coming to this Thames River to bless the water. From here, we're blessing the water of all around the world today, all of us, because we scientifically, this is discovered that water is communicating beyond time and space. And when we bless our water here within you, here in the air, the river, water goes all around the world, the earth, with our blessing. And firstly, I would like to hit this tuning fork of 528 hertz. This is the vibration of love and even fixes all the DNAs. And what Dr. Emoto used to do was to open up the sky with this 528 hertz. Special verses. And we will open up the sky with this 528 hertz. The sky, the God, will receive our wishes for peace on earth, and that vibration will come back to us 100 times, 200 times, even more powerful, because we are sending our prayer together. Collective consciousness becomes very powerful, amplifies the energy. And in this children's book of Emoto Peace Project of Dr. Emoto, it's called The Message from Water. It shows in here that water receives all the vibration of the words, of our thoughts, and how water reacts before and after the prayer. After the prayer, water molecule becomes really beautiful. We shall remember that we are the container. Each person is the container of the water. This earth is the water planet. So when we pray together, this will be happening everywhere around the world, okay? So I would like to hit the 528. Please send your loving gratitude to whole world, this earth, okay?
Was given to Dr. Emoto by the last Japanese Zen, which is the last Japanese enlightened person. He was also the physician to the emperor, and it means the eternal
the power of eternal universe.
The power of the eternal has crystallized to form a universe of love and gratitude, effectively. But it's done in Japanese, it's done phonetically in Japanese, so it's an invocation, it's a statement of already is, it's already happened. So if you feel this, it's a feeling of not into the future, it's something that already is as we speak.
So please, I would like to make it say small phrases so you can repeat after me. Okay? Uchū no.
Uchū no.
Mugen no.
Mugen no.
Chikara ga.
Chikara ga.
Korikotte.
Korikotte.
Makoto no.
Makoto no.
Daiwa no.
Daiwa no.
Mio ga.
Mio ga.
Narinatta.
Narinatta.
Uchū no.
Uchū no.
Mugen no.
Mugen no.
Chikara ga.
Chikara ga.
Korikotte.
Korikotte.
Makoto no.
Makoto no.
Daiwa no.
Daiwa no.
Mio ga.
Mio ga.
Narinatta.
Narinatta.
Uchū no.
Uchū no.
Mugen no.
Mugen no.
Chikara ga.
Chikara ga.
Korikotte.
Korikotte.
Makoto no.
Makoto no.
Daiwa no.
Daiwa no.
Mio ga.
Mio ga.
Narinatta.
Narinatta.
Mugen no chikara ga korikotte. Makoto no daiwa no mio ga. This time, we will say Ho'oponopono to water, because we have hurt water. We have taken it granted that water is here, but now we shall be apologizing that we have taken it granted that water is all around us. It's a very sacred, very, without water, nothing can exist. So we will be appreciating it and sending loving thoughts to water, okay? So please repeat after me. Water, we are sorry.
Water, we are sorry.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, we thank you.
Water, we thank you.
Water, we love you.
Water, we love you.
Water, we are sorry.
Water, we are sorry.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, we thank you.
Water, we thank you.
Water, we love you.
Water, we love you.
Water, we are sorry.
Water, we are sorry.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, we thank you.
Water, we thank you.
Water, we love you.
Water, we love you.
Now please close your eyes and visualize this whole earth wrapped with a golden light, with love and gratitude for 1 minute.
You know, water carries our thoughts and our prayers. No matter where you are, your prayers will be carried to the rest of the world, exactly as he said. So, thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you. So we're making this water medicine, this offering today. Now's the time, if you have any prayers or any songs you wish to offer, now's the time. Or any poems.
Together, hum together, okay?
You'll know this one.
All right, ready? Ready? La 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 la.
Emeritus Senzi had a beautiful voice, didn't he?
He
had like a trained operatic voice. Yeah. He was an amazing awesome singer. So he loved music as well, didn't he?
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hello, friends. I hope you enjoyed that water ceremony. We did that yesterday at the Thames River here in London, England. And now I'd like to go on to Findhorn. It's one of the most famous eco villages, and it was started by a gentleman named Peter Caddy in the early 1960s. He was able to grow vegetables and create a very spiritual community on land that was sand, full of sand, and before that thought to be incapable of growing anything. But he was an amazing man, and in Findhorn, they say that they have the community itself is in service to spirit, humanity, and the earth, and they hold in common the following principles. The first is love in action, in which work is love, in co-creation with nature, and deep inner listening with meditation. Their guidelines are spiritual service, spiritual practice, personal growth, integrity, respecting others, direct honest and clear communications, reflection, and as well as nonviolence and perspective. When I was there last weekend, I felt the presence of angels all around me, and I was able to interview several people, including a wonderful man named Peter Thompson, who's from Australia, lives there at Findhorn. So please listen to these beautiful interviews, and I'll come back at the end of the interviews. And Eric, thank you so much for playing these segments for me today. Hello, friends. I'm at Findhorn, beautiful Findhorn, Scotland, today at the Findhorn Foundation, and I'm interviewing a wonderful lady. Your name is?
Anne.
Anne. Hi, Anne.
Yes, hello.
You have beautiful plants here, and tell us the secret of how you make them grow so well.
Well, it's the usual thing of good compost and food at the right time of year, watering when the soil is dry. It's that usual thing. I grow organically. So I think I'm being kind to them. But I also sometimes ask them for their opinion, whether they're in the right place or not. Very occasionally they tell me that. Occasionally I ask them what other plant they would like to have with them to grow better. Occasionally they tell me that. For example, once I had a black currant bush tell me that it wanted chamomile near it, which really surprised me. But
calming influence.
Yeah, I think so, yes. Chamomile is something that suits me very well. And it worked.
Uh-huh.
You know, it worked. But mainly I think it's because I love garden. I'm sure any gardener will relate to this. Mm-hmm. All through the world, that if you really love gardening and you love your plants and you're happy to be outside working with them, they get that they get that feeling from you. Mm-hmm.
And so you see that in the physical world by sending them love in the higher dimensions, it translates into better growth here in the third dimension.
Absolutely. Wow. Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes.
How do you handle, like, if there's bugs on it, or if you need to handle a pesticide? How do you take care of insects or infestations?
Well, really and truly, I ought to be talking to them, but I often forget because of my own perhaps distress at seeing a plant turning poorly because of bugs. But I, as I'm organic, I only use harmless products that are not going to harm beneficial insects. So I might spray with washing up liquid, diluted washing up liquid, to get rid of green fly. When I have talked to pests, I've not been very successful. So then it's a question of, does the plant survive or does the pest survive?
Sure.
And I have to make some kind of decision.
Sure. Right.
Which
right.
is hard sometimes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Well, you have a beautiful garden, and all the plants seem to be very happy today.
Thank you very much indeed. Yes, I really hope so. Thank you.
All right. And, well, thank you. Thank you so much, Anne, for giving us this words of wisdom. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And you don't have to ask.
Oh, by the way. That was Anne, a wonderful lady doing gardening here at Finhorn. And I also have a good friend of mine named Peter. Peter, hi. Thanks for coming on my radio show.
Good day, Ted.
Good day.
Yeah, that's a very common saying in Australia.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Well, you're not from Finhorn. You live in Australia for part of the year, and then in Spain, and then here in Finhorn as well.
Yeah, I come here. I've had endless summer for the last 6 years coming to the foundation to work in their garden, Cologne Garden.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we're approaching the garden right now. What a beautiful place. It seems very green and lush, and all the plants seem to be growing like crazy.
Yes, yes. Well, we make our own compost. We one of the tenets of this foundation is co-creation with nature, and work is love in action. So that's what we do. We grow beautiful, nutrient-dense vegetables for the two kitchens from the foundation, and we make our own compost using scraps from one of those kitchens, along with horse manure and straw and other ingredients, and that is our main fertilizer.
Well, that sounds delicious.
Yes, it is for the what shall we call the soil food web, the amazing 10 tons per hectare of living matter that actually provide all of the nutrition in the soil for plants.
Wow, that's amazing.
A beautiful soil.
Peter, could you describe what these are here?
Yeah, this is one of our polytunnels. This one's called Badger. That one's called Otter. The one down there, the newest one, is Big Lion. And we have a propagation tunnel you can just see over there. And that's called Tara. Plus we've got a couple of little ones as well. And that's where we grow the greens, mainly greens, and tomatoes and cucumbers. For the kitchens, and also at least one or two of those tunnels are also growing in the winter, because it does get cold here. And but in the summer, it's those crops I just mentioned, particularly the tomatoes and the cucumbers. We can't grow them in the fields.
I see. Let's go over and take a look at some of the plants. Peter, what is this over here?
Okay, these are our four short-term compost heaps, and this is our main fertilizer, our only solid fertilizer. Apart, we also use sometimes cow manure and horse manure, but for most of the crops, we put our own compost on. So these four heaps are made like a lasagna, and various ingredients are stacked on them. And then they sit for about a month and then turned and then turned again. So from start to finish, each of those heaps takes about 3 months to produce viable or usable compost.
Mm-hmm. Now, over here, I see some beautiful flowers. Are those nasturtiums?
Yeah, they're the nasturtiums that were... When we were weeding this otter here, in preparation for, we've got here French beans about to go in on this side.
Oh, wow.
And on this side, there's going to be cucumbers.
Oh.
Okay? So we had to clear the crops which were grown in here over winter. And when we did that, I decided these nasturtiums just grew up by themselves. And and I don't think the devas, the nature spirits, would have liked us to pull them out, particularly while they've got flowers,
yeah,
particularly
yeah.
beautiful flowers. So I attuned into that. We'll let them be there. And it's up to our focaliser called Jules, who is the looks after the tunnels here. It's up to her what she does when the cucumbers go in. I think they'll be finished by then, by the time the cucumbers are ready to go in.
With your permission, could I try a nasturtium?
Yes, of course you can. Yeah, yeah. Apparently the flowers are very nice, but watch out, there's
edible
bumblebees in there too, so don't pick one.
Well, if I ate one with a bumblebee, it'd be added protein. Let me try the tip of the nasturtium.
Mm.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Oh yeah.
It's like a little honeysuckle.
Yep. Well, that's why the bees are in there.
Mm. Mm. You know, you can use nasturtiums in salads. That's delicious.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yep.
Mm, what a nice little snack. Thank you. Yeah. Peter, what are these here?
These are broad beans here, the big leafed plants. And broad beans are a big round bean, about the size of one of your nickels, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah, but a lot thicker.
Uh-huh.
And they're a legume, of course, a bean. And here, where the trellis, we are... making a trellis, they're runner beans, they're really climbing beans, and they are beans that are about what do you call a foot long?
Foot long,
almost an inch wide or half an inch wide, and about similar to a fairly thick. And so they're a very long bean, and they get chopped up into little segments and
nice.
Used in cooking like that.
Nice.
So we grow these generally in the same field each year, but we always rotate. We never put the same plant into the same tunnel or the same field year after year.
I see.
Like a lot of chemical farmers actually do, which is not very good.
Right.
At all.
Right.
So we're part of organic and biological farming. It is is rotation is a very important practice.
Peter, what is this here? What are we looking at here?
This is where our zucchinis are going to go in, or are going in, and we've still got a bit more to plant. Here they call them courgettes. Mm. We're just planting those now, and there's still a few more in the cold frames to come out. We'll get another 4 or 5 rows here, but they grow very large plants, of course. No,
about 2 or 3 feet across.
Yes,
my
yes,
goodness.
Certainly. And then once those little zucchinis start growing, they can go from about a finger up to about half a foot in a couple of days. So,
oh my goodness, that's amazing.
Yeah, we have to, when we harvest them, we have to be very careful. We don't leave anything too large on, because the next time, 2 days later, it's become a marrow.
Oh, wow.
and the best taste for zucchinis, of course, is when they're,
they're small.
Small,
the
yeah.
babies.
Not so small, but certainly about, how's that? What, about 5 inches long?
5 inches long.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Wow, okay. Peter, what are we looking at here?
This is Big Lion, and this is where our tomatoes
are fine.
You say tomato, I say potato. this is a tomato tunnel this year, and 311 of them have just gone in. And as you can see, they're being supported by strings that we hang from wires up on top of the polytunnel. They're watered by T-tape. That's a little tape that is on the ground. So it's very frugal in watering. And anyhow, you wouldn't use overhead sprinklers on tomatoes. Otherwise, they would get more prone to fungus.
I see.
So. Anyhow, this is our, you can see there's little tomatoes already growing.
Oh, wow.
So they've only just gone in the last week.
How big do these tomatoes get?
They get right up to the top of that, they get almost to the top of those wires up there.
About 6 feet.
Yes. More than six.
More than six.
I'm 6 feet, they certainly go up above my head.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Wow. Well, and how big are these tomatoes?
Oh, most of them are little. They're not the sort of the big tomatoes, because they are best for the two kitchens. They're fairly small tomatoes, mm-hmm. but really nice. They're both basically green and yellow, mm-hmm. They're really sweet, mm-hmm. and of course they're organic.
Wow, amazing. So you don't use any chemicals?
No, there's no, we use no chemicals, and certainly no toxic chemicals here.
And it's not GMO, and there's no Roundup.
No, there is definitely no glyphosate here in this place.
Well, that's good. That's good. That's excellent.
No, we use, as I said, our own compost, and when, if we want a liquid fertilizer, we make it from worm cast. We make worm cast tea, and also we use comfrey leaves to also go in that, and that provides a liquid fertilizer if we need a liquid fertilizer to boost them.
Wow, that sounds amazing, Peter. All these plants look so healthy and big too.
Yes. Well, that they're only just gone in, so they're still recovering from the planting, but yes, in about a month's time, that'll all be just a mass of green and lots of little tomatoes with green and yellow.
Wonderful. It looks like a beautiful place. Peter, what are we looking at here?
These are the cold frames where the plants come out from when they get to a certain size in the modules that are they are propagated in Tara. Then they can come out in these modules here, where you can see down there, or if they've been potted on in Tara to these larger size. These are the courgettes that are about to go out, and the runner beans that are about to go out. But also there's lettuce and various other crops that are in the other modules, and that's to harden them, ready for going out in the fields.
And these are in enclosures here, and you've got covers on the top that you can pull down at night to keep them warm if necessary.
That's it. Yeah. And so a member of the team is always on duty in the mornings and in the evenings, 7 days a week, mm-hmm. to open them or close them as required.
Mm. Oh, that's wonderful. So everybody works together to commute. This community garden?
Well, yes, we have a team of around about 7 or 8 people, mm-hmm. on a permanent basis, and not so much in the winter, we certainly do 2 or 3 shifts every week each to open or close.
When you're gone, is there anyone who would be taking care of your part?
Yes. There's about 4 or 5 people that are here permanently.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah, they're staff members, mm-hmm. and people like me, or co-workers who are here during the winter as well.
I see.
How many people live here in Finhorn?
Oh, it's hard to know. I don't know the full size of the community, but then there's a lot of what they call people living in the towns and area outside the community, mm-hmm. but there'll be definitely thousands, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you have good support here,
yes.
for the for the work.
Yeah.
How old is Finhorn? How long has it been here?
It's been going for 55 years now. I think 1962 was the initial time when the founders came to the what they called the park.
So are you expanding this place?
Well, it's been expanded as an eco village, mm-hmm. but it's the actual spiritual community called the Finhorn Foundation has been pretty well the same area for many years now.
Peter and Michiko, what do you attribute the success of Finhorn to be as a planned community?
Oh, well, it's famous, world famous, and it attracts thousands of people here to do programs, and it's also an educational community as well. But yeah, it's famous in the world for sure.
Yeah, everybody knows about Finhorn. And you know, my dream is to create those eco villages in many different places around the world, so people will be living in harmony with nature and all the beings. So, and we won't be using any chemicals. And living in harmony with other people too, the small villages around the world.
Absolutely, and intentional communities, and particularly eco-villages, that's one of their purposes, is to people coming together and living naturally.
Mm-hmm.
They started over 20 years ago, GEN, Global Eco-Village Network,
mm-hmm.
and it's the headquarters are just across the road here. And there are, I don't know how many communities, but I think there's hundreds, mm-hmm. hundreds of communities in GEN,
uh-huh.
and it's... And it's a growing entity.
Any advice for us to start our eco villages around the world?
I suggest you get in touch with Jen over here, okay. Particularly if you can. In fact, I can show you where they are,
mm-hmm.
and try and contact them before you leave.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Peter, could you please repeat what you just said?
Ted, I just said that it appears to me that the human race is evolving, or should be evolving, and there's many people are evolving, and it's not just natural selection which is creating this evolving, but there's a lot of people who seem to be devolving, and they're just staying stuck in their paradigm of the past with a denial of climate emergency and change and so on, the destruction of nature,
natural resources,
the fallacy of growth.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have continuous growth on a finite planet.
Exactly.
Unless you're going to take over some other planet.
Right.
Well, of course, that's planned, of course.
Right.
Yeah. And now we're getting abominations like thousands of satellites being put up by capitalism and beaming 5G at everyone in the world. And this is an abomination.
Exactly.
It can only be dangerous. And it's not natural.
No.
We are not, in the Finhorn tradition, co-creating with nature. We are destroying nature and everything on this planet. And we're on a path of destruction for ourselves. Falco, the founder of Damanhur, he reincarnated back from 600 years in the future because by then the planet was dead.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That's the reason he created Damanhur. To get the message out that unless we start, humanity starts another timeline that is not on what we are on at the moment, if we don't do that, then we'll end up destroying not only ourselves, but also the whole planet and all its species.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, tell us about the what information you have about the time machine at Damanhur.
The two Damanhurians that came to Tasmania to talk to us about that, about Damanhur, the lady mentioned, I forget her name, she was one of the dancers that they had to dance continuously while Falco was in the time machine, which is hidden in one of the amazing temples, the temples of humanity.
Temples
of humanity. And apparently, you know, they had to keep dancing, and so they had to raise their energies, their vibrations, to keep him in alive while he was going backwards in time or forwards in time. But he mainly went backwards, I think, into Atlantis, and brought back all of the technology that was destroyed when Atlantis was destroyed by their ego, apparently.
Right. Mm. That's right.
Ego was the destruction of Atlantis, I understand.
Now, that brings up an interesting point, Peter, because you'd mentioned earlier this afternoon when we were turning around the beautiful gardens at Finhorn that you can plan out these eco-villages, but if a person's ego takes over, then it can be destroying itself.
Well, that's what's happened in my own little village in Tasmania.
Tasmania, Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. And the founder, mind you, he is the son of Holocaust survivors, and he's a very damaged man, and he's charismatic, very charismatic, when he is wanting to sell something to you. But he thought he lost control, and the association which was formed he wasn't getting his way, and so he created conflict last winter, and I arrived back in my community last September and in intermediation, which cost us thousands of dollars.
Oh, wow. And
it's none of, it wasn't of our creation.
Sure.
And so I joined that community and invested in that community. I was going to build a hexagonal straw bale house. I got all the approvals ready. And then when the time came to actually build it, and this conflict started, I decided,
no.
I'm going to sell the land and sell and give away. I'm giving away $6,000 worth of approved plans.
Oh, wow.
to some lucky person, or some person who can join the family that can join the village. I still have a little apartment there, an old motel room, and that's my official residence. And I use that as a base when I'm in Australia. But that's all. It's a base. I feel more at home in Findhorn,
uh-huh,
or in my partner's place in Madrid, than I do in my own official home.
Do you think in the future the world communities will be based upon Findhorn more than the current unsustainable development?
Well, the three precepts of Findhorn are deep inner listening,
inner listening.
Yes, co-creation with nature, and work is love in action.
Mm-hmm.
Those three tenets can change the whole concept of how we live. Yeah, and of course there is God. But God is not it's not a religious God.
Right.
God is not a religion. There is far more to God than anything. And may I mention Neil Donald Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
His book's Conversations with God.
Mm-hmm.
I am currently reading What God Wants.
Interesting.
It's a very interesting book, I can assure you.
Interesting.
Yeah,
wow.
And when he gets to the middle of the book, where after he's already said what the religions say, all religions and also past the ancestors of various cultures say that God, that what they think that God wants, in actual fact, he said, God wants nothing, needs nothing. And that's... Anyhow, I won't go on too far there because it would be getting complicated.
Yeah.
But Neil Donald Walsh, I was attracted to him because my second name is Neil, N-E-A-L-E. It is very unusual, and I didn't ask my parents why they did that, but I have no doubt it was not a mistake.
Now, there are no mistakes.
No. There was a purpose, the fact that I was attracted. I wouldn't have even read the first book if he hadn't seen that name.
Yeah,
because there's N-E-I-L is the universal swelling of Neil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. Michiko, what's your opinion of Finhorn?
Finhorn. It's a beautiful, beautiful, peaceful place. And, you know, it was my dream to make eco villages around the world, and now I've learned so much from you, Peter, today. And you know, the most important thing for all of us, including myself too, for all the human beings, is not to keep our ego, because that can lead us to greed. People can that and selfishness. Those are the ones that are really harming and destroying what we the way that we should be living in harmony with nature and the earth and with everybody else. So if we are aware of that everybody has ego, and ego itself is not bad, but when it goes to selfishness, to greedy,
control,
and jealousy, instead of compassion, love, caring, then we go to the wrong path. So caring about nature, respecting nature, and living in harmony with everything we have, that's what I think God wants us. And if it's not God, if I'm not allowed to use the word God, that's something great that is giving us everything we have here.
Yes, well, thank you so much, Michiko, for sharing your viewpoint. And Peter, we've got a few minutes left. I'd love to have you wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Well, thank you. I'm not too sure what else to say, sir. No, it's been lovely to listen to your talk about the crystals and water crystals.
Yes.
And they say so much. No, I mean, in photos are just so beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Or shocking.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Also.
When we're talking about polluted water.
Uh-huh.
And Ted, no, thank you very much for your for coming, and to our community here, and I hope you never know. I hope to see you again sometime.
Always welcome to visit me in the States, Peter. Thank you so much.
We will be back here again, right, Ted?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Coming to you live tonight from Finhorn, Scotland. This is Out of This World Radio. Take care, everyone. Bye bye.
Finhorn's a beautiful place in northern Scotland. It's they grew vegetables in an area where it's just completely sand dunes, and that they did this all with the help of nature divas and the angels and the spirits around the area. It's a very high vibrational place. It's one of the most famous eco villages in the world. And if you are in Scotland or do come to England, I urge you to visit the area. Finhorn's a beautiful place with many beautiful people, and I hope you've all enjoyed tonight's program. I always enjoy talking to Simon on the air. He'll be back on my show again on Friday, July 5th, right after our 4th of July. Next week, I'll be traveling, but if you are in Geneva or Munich, Dresden, Germany, or Reykjavik, Iceland, and would like a reading, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I know that if we all work together, we can and will make this planet a much better and happier place. And I just want to thank everyone so much for listening and supporting Out of This World Radio. I hope you all have a beautiful and happy weekend, and thank you again so much for all your beautiful support. Bye-bye, everyone, and good night. Have a beautiful weekend.
Kanata ni hikari.